Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
You're listening to the FT Money Show, brought to you by Investors Chronicle and FT Money.
Hello and welcome to the FT Money Show. In our first show of 2008, no interest rate cut this month, but banks and building societies are already offering some surprisingly good deals for borrowers and for savers. Hedging against a falling dollar? It was a good idea last year, but how will your investments be affected by currencies in 2008? Investing in venture capital? Do the tax advantages make it worth the risk? And we have some good news and bad news on mobile phones. I'm Matthew Vincent, and I'll be giving you the lowdown on all of these money matters in downloadable form with the help of my colleague from FT Money, Elaine Moore.
Hello.
And from Investors Chronicle, John McLeod.
Hello.
So let's start with the money news and what the banks and building societies are offering to borrowers and savers despite this week's decision to keep interest rates the same. Elaine, you found some really very good and quite odd deals given that rates haven't moved.
Yes, exactly. This rhetoric that's going on at the moment with banks and building societies that's similar to retailers where they're talking about sales. We've got HSBC and NatWest have both been promoting themselves as having sales at the moment. One of the offers that HSBC has is a 25% refund on the interest that you pay for a personal loan, which sounds quite good. But when you look at it closely, as with all these things, it's not actually as good as it sounds. The rate is 8.3%, which is quite high compared to lots of other loan rates at the moment. And even with the discount, it still comes out as around the higher end of the rates available.
But that is a classic January sale tactic, isn't it?
Exactly.
Quote the very high
think you're getting
recommended
a bargain.
Price. Yes, exactly.
Exactly. Like everyone, you know, spending all their money in the Harrods sale and buying things they don't actually need. The personal finance experts say that there are a lot more simple rates out there that don't involve any sort of calculations that you could do better with. I think there's a Sainsbury's one, Sainsbury's high value loan for 6.5%, which is quite clearly much better.
Indeed. And there seem to be quite a few incentives being offered to customers for signing up to, you know, new accounts, new products, that sort of thing.
There are. Personally, the experts that I've been speaking to have said that this is all about the number of customers switching their current accounts rising. And people used to be put off by the idea of this because they thought it would be a hassle, you might mess up your finances. And although a lot of people are still worried about that, it has become a lot easier. And there was a change in regulation that meant that banks had to make the whole transaction completely transparent. So much more people are doing this. And you have offers. There's one at the moment that's very attention-grabbing. There's an advert on TV about it from First Direct where they will give you £100 to switch your current account to them. But they'll also give you another £100 if you decide you don't like it. So that's £200 for nothing.
So you could open the account on Monday. Can you close it on Tuesday?
You have to wait 6 months, obviously.
So that's the catch.
Just a catch, yeah. I think there are, in a way, they are relying on apathy, which lots of the current account providers do, on the fact that you'll open it, you won't bother again. But even if you open it, it's £100.
£200 for just opening and closing an account isn't bad. Will another bank then help you transfer your account away from First Direct?
They have to. That's the law now. So it shouldn't make any kind of difference to your financial dealings. You should just be able to go into the bank, say you want to close your account, and that should be the end of it for you. So it's quite good. There were some others around. There were some offers of interest-free overdrafts, other things, all trying to attract current account customers in the same way.
And there seem to be some incentives being offered by mortgage lenders as well, which can seem quite generous at first glance.
There are. There's one from Chelsea Building Society. Again, this is on TV at the moment, offering you a percentage of your mortgage as a cash deal if you switch to their accounts. It has certain caveats that you have to have a certain amount, your mortgage has to be above a certain amount, and I think you have to keep it with them for a certain amount of time as well.
And I think some other lenders are offering some quite attractive low mortgage rates as well. You know, even though there hasn't been the expected quarter point cuts in the bank base rates, we were looking at our deal of the week in FT Money the other week, and it was HSBC in its January sale offering a rate of 4.99, which I think is a discount off the standard variable rate. But Lloyds TSB was, I think, 4.88% discounted tracker, discounted off the bank base rate. Both of these two-year deals, but they're getting close to the sort of low rates that were available a couple of years ago,
exactly. Yeah. And especially as lots of experts are saying that they believe the bank will drop rates another one or two times this year, which means that borrowers could end up seeing their rates come down, mortgage rates come down even further.
Yeah, no, a discounted, a low discounted tracker mortgage, that does look like a very good idea. Well, Elaine, thanks very much for that. And Elaine actually picks out the best of these deals in FT Money, which is available with the weekend FT on the 12th of January. And you can also send in your questions on saving, borrowing, or any other topic for that matter by emailing us at ask.ftyourmoney@ft.com. Still to come in the programme, venture capital trusts. What sort of ventures do they back, and should you take the risk this year? And we have some good news and bad news on old mobile phones. But first, hedging your investments against currency movements. In recent years, investors and fund managers have tried to hedge their exposure to dollar earnings, and with good reason, as the dollar has proved incredibly weak. But if it were sterling that depreciated this year, what could that mean for your investments? Well, to find out, Dan Thomas spoke to Andrew Milligan, who's head of global strategy at Standard Life Investments, and this is what Andrew had to say.
Currency is always incredibly difficult to forecast because different factors drive them at different times. Sometimes it's valuation, sometimes it's current account and trade deficit worries. At the moment, sterling, dollar and the euro are really being driven by interest rate expectations. People are pricing in rate cuts in the United States, in the UK, but not into Europe. And so currencies are moving accordingly. It's not the only factor, because risk is the other factor which people are taking into account, which is why the yen is rising at the moment as people take risk trades off. But for the first half of this year, therefore, I think we should be in a position where people are pricing in sterling weakness, dollar weakness, and euro strength.
I see. And so how will this affect the savers and investors' portfolios as they stand at the moment?
I think there's two questions which people have to answer at this moment in time, which is how important are a firm's overseas operations and how important are a firm's overseas sales, because the two can be surprisingly different. Mm-hmm. There's a number of companies which have very big overseas sales indeed, a number of the pharmaceutical companies, some retailers, some industrials. But often in those cases, they actually also have big overseas operations. They're not really an exporter. It's just that they happen to have a lot of assets in other countries as well. The pharmaceuticals are the classic example. They sell and produce a lot in the United States. Therefore, movements in dollar sterling exchange rate don't really matter that much to them. Mm. There are some other companies, though, which are exporters, or where the dollar is really important. If we think of a classic exporter like Renishaw, a name which some people might have heard of, it makes high-tech precision tools, basically manufactures in this country and sells in America and Asia. Therefore, clearly, a lower value of sterling against the dollar is going to be quite supportive for that company. Mm. And then there's companies like British Airways, where it's going to be swings and roundabouts. The fact that sterling is low is, of course, makes British Airways more competitive against US carriers. But we've got to remember that actually one of its major problems is the cost of energy, the cost of fuel, and that's priced in dollars. So looking at any portfolio, actually, a fund manager is going to have to take on board swings and roundabouts. Some assets are going to do quite better. So exporters from the UK, the industrial sector, would generally perform better. But if you looked simply at some of the sales figures for a number of UK companies, you'd probably get the wrong impression about how important sterling actually is at the end of the day.
And so in terms of the people who might own US equities or US assets, how will it help their holdings at the moment?
By and large, currency should be quite helpful for someone buying US assets at the moment, because if we are thinking of the US dollar appreciating over time, then that is going to benefit someone buying US assets. this is one of the reasons, actually, that people have been thinking that there could be quite a lot of merger and acquisition activity between the two countries as well. If it's a good time for people to go to New York on holiday, it's also a good time for UK stocks to be thinking about buying some of their US counterparts. Mm-hmm. So I think short term, the movement in sterling dollar is going to be supportive of US assets. And generally, in current market conditions, difficult market conditions, the US equity market traditionally performs quite well. US investors repatriate holdings from other markets and bring them back. People like earnings visibility. They like large, big cap companies. And of course, America, that's what the Dow Jones Index is. And people are expecting the Federal Reserve to be cutting interest rates further and think that the US will be getting out of the recession if it appears sooner than other countries and therefore will be buying those assets too. So US assets generally look like they've probably got a bit of a tailwind. They might still fall this year, but other markets could well fall more. It's a relative game, of course, and that's what a fund manager or a strategist or an individual investor has to think about, the relative performance between different assets.
Sure. And just finally, is there an argument here to reweigh a portfolio from UK assets to US assets or UK domestic earners to US earners?
I think the time scale which an investor has to be thinking about is absolutely fundamental. I started talking earlier about how currencies are very difficult to forecast because the drivers change. In the next couple of months, the interest rate expectations and the repatriation of capital look to be a driver of sterling dollar. And that may well tie in with an investor's time frame. They're saying, actually, I think I'm only going to be investing over a 3-6 month time scale, and therefore let's take some profits here and reallocate elsewhere. Of course, for a longer term investor, the currency probably matters rather less. Mm. And investor may well say, I want to stay at home because I can start to pick up some good value within UK stocks that I think are terribly downbeat. Some of the financials, some of the retailers, some of the industrials in this country have suffered enormously this year, let alone over the last 6 months. So I think it very much depends upon the time scale of the investor. If they're thinking of trading, so to speak, over a 3-6 month time scale, currency will matter. If we're thinking of really investing for 2 to 3 years, then currency really should be put well down the pecking order because other matters like the fundamental earnings outlook, valuations, other key drivers like that are going to be much more important.
That was Andrew Milligan of Standard Life Investments. And for more on currency hedging and currency trading, see this week's FT Money out on the 12th of January. Coming up, we have good news and bad news on mobile phones. Before that, though, venture capital trusts, or VCTs as they're known. John, we're now sort of squarely in the VCT in investing season, and funds are looking to attract investors. What are the risks and rewards looking like this time round?
Well, the return profile on VCTs has changed. There used to be a 40% tax break, which required a minimum holding period of 3 years. That's now gone down to 30% income tax break for a 5-year holding period. And what's more, the companies that you can invest in have changed as well. They've not changed, but the size has changed. It used to be a 15 million gross assets test, and now that's come down to 1 million. And there's also this year a 50 employees test.
So these are much smaller companies that a venture capital trust can get your money into.
That's right. So the tax break's gone down and the risk profile has increased. So I spoke to Richard Allen from IFA Ironbridge, and this is what he said.
Yeah, we've had a couple of changes announced for this current tax year. I mean, it might be worth just emphasising that the current initial income tax break is 30%, and the minimum holding period, same as last year, is now 5 years minimum. Changes announced this year in the budget last time is a new employee test. Qualifying companies must have no more than 50 employees at the time of investment. I think that's going to have a negative impact on particularly AIM VCTs going forward, in so much that it might impact on a potential deal flow. So I don't think we'll find too much in the way of new AIM fundraising offers in future years. The 5-year minimum holding rule is entirely sensible, really. I mean, VCTs, they're sophisticated products, higher risk, illiquid, and certainly long term. Managers have 3 years in which to invest the money in any event. We're seeing more and more limited life VCTs, whereby they'll have a defined lifespan and the managers will look to wind up the VCT as soon as possible after 5 years. And they're proving attractive for obvious reasons, you know, being that the investors perhaps want their money back at some point. The buyback policies that are in place They'll be attractive to investors who wish to sell. And a number of VCT managers have been operating buyback policies successfully for a number of years, buying back at discounts of perhaps around about 10% discount to net asset value. However, these buyback policies, there can be no guarantee that the managers will be able to buy back. They are subject to liquidity, i.e., you know, cash available within the VCT. They're subject to board approval. And managers, in any event, can't buy back more than 14.99% of share capital per annum anyway. So, you know, investors shouldn't treat the fact that a VCT has a buyback policy as a guarantee for an exit, because, you know, they are illiquid and there can be no guarantee.
That was Richard Allen of independent financial advisor Allenbridge. And John, the point that he makes about share buybacks there is quite an interesting one, because that's going to have an effect on investors' ability to get out of venture capital trusts, surely, to exit their investments.
I mean, buybacks have been probably the best way to get out of VCTs, because there's not much demand for shares in the secondary market. And we understand that one AIM VCT has already scrapped its buyback policy, which could cause, you know, upset with investors who've thought they've got that guaranteed, sort of semi-guaranteed exit. It's not guaranteed. If people all want to get to the door to get the money back after they've had the five-year period, that could cause problems.
Because the secondary market just really isn't there, or isn't developed enough, or certainly isn't liquid enough.
There are a few that have been successful VCTs that have traded close to premiums, but a lot of them otherwise trade in quite wide discounts.
So that's certainly an additional risk factor. The other one that you mentioned a little bit earlier is the way in which the rules have changed on the types of companies that VCTs can get into. So we're now talking about really rather young, small startup businesses.
I mean, if you're a generalist VCT and you can invest in unquoted companies, those that focus on development capital shouldn't have a problem, because they're small companies anyway. Where they're larger companies, say management buyouts, they can use special purpose vehicles or new companies to do kind of reverse cash shells. But that's going to be harder in the AIM market. I think the fact that there haven't been many AIM offers this year suggests that brokers aren't going to be wanting to set up special cash shells for them for AIM launches.
So that's going to reduce the number of opportunities out there this time round. So you need to be really, really very careful. I suppose people will look at the tax relief that's available on investment, but they've really got to think about the risk factors.
That's right. At least managers have been sensible and not sought to raise too much money for AIM VCTs. Because the trouble is, if they can't invest the funds, they could end up losing the tax breaks as well.
And, John, you've actually got an article on this very subject in the Investors Chronicle coming out on the 18th of January. Look out for that next week. And finally today, we have some good news and bad news on mobile phones. If you are one of the thousands, if not millions, of people who got a new mobile phone for Christmas, don't bin your old one, or certainly don't keep it in a drawer as a spare, because there's a range of websites that now pay cash of up to £150 for old handsets, which I found quite remarkable. So, certainly because my old handset is huge and seems to be based on a Fisher-Price toy.
Well, it's not that remarkable when you think about how much phones actually cost to buy them new. If you get a contract that doesn't involve you having a new phone and you try and buy one on one of the phone's websites, some of them are thousands of pounds. The new iPhone, for example, that was horrendously expensive.
So, of course, with the people queuing around the block, even though it's really quite pricey.
Exactly. So I suppose if you were going to send off one of those, if you're sending off an iPhone, then you would expect to get £150 back. But if it's your average bog-standard phone, then...
Yes, I can't imagine many iPhones...
winging their way to Africa.
Being posted off. Yes, exactly. But I suppose that's the additional good news about these deals, is that these phones are being reconditioned and repurposed for... I think in the case of the Envirophone website service, it sends its phones to Africa and South America.
So you're helping with third world development, and also the phones themselves would be quite environmentally unfriendly if you just put them in landfill, so this is a much better way of doing it.
Oh yes, in fact, I was reading about this on the Envirophone site. I think it's also the batteries, isn't it?
They leak, don't they?
Yes.
It's the same thing as the light bulbs, the energy efficient light bulb. There's some weird filaments or something that, I don't know really the technical terms,
no,
but they leak
something
awful into the land that never goes away, and... Yes. It's much better to keep using them.
Yeah, the downside of technology, the more advanced things become, the more impossible it is to actually dispose of them.
Break them down, yeah.
Yeah. I suppose the bad news, the only bad news associated with this is the figure of £150 only applies to the super whizzy 3G multimedia
handsets. I believe it's nearer sort of £10, or perhaps even less, if your phone isn't that highly specced.
But even that is quite good. And I think also you're saying that they pay for the packaging, don't they? So you don't have to do anything. So it's not even that much harder than throwing it in the bin, and you are going to do something good with it. So
yeah, exactly.
That will attract lots of people.
They do make it easy if you've got that old handset. I might do this. I might go and...
We should all do this. Go and look through our drawers.
Yes, exactly. Find these old phones and do a good thing. And if you'd like any more details of exactly how to go about this and the websites to visit to donate your old handset, have a look at our Deal of the Week in FT Money, which is out on the 12th of January. And that's all we've got time for in this week's FT Money show. Remember, you can email your views and your questions to ask.ftyourmoney@ft.com. And we'll be back next week with another financial lowdown in downloadable form. But until then, it's goodbye from me, and it's goodbye from Elaine and John.
Bye.
Goodbye.
And it's goodbye from our podcast producers, Blue Barracuda.